Greetings, everyone. I want to finish part two of the sermon I gave last week on humility. Humility. We talked about what Jesus said. He that exalts himself will be humbled, and he that humbles himself will be exalted. And as we talked about last week, who is the most exalted person in all of the universe? It is Jesus Christ himself. He's the most exalted. And why? Because no one ever humbled himself as much as Jesus Christ has humbled himself. No one. Christ humbled himself by emptying himself of his great majesty. No one has ever humbled themselves to that degree. And no one probably ever can or ever will. So Jesus Christ is the one who humbled himself the most, and God therefore has given him a name above every name, that at the name of Jesus Christ every knee would bow. He is the most exalted person in all of the universe because of what he has done, and what he has done for you and for me as well. We're talking about the statements. We talked about how Christ had shown us the humble circumstances that we have to allow people to be in. We talked about how the Greeks and the Greek ethics, Aristotle didn't, the Greeks did not value the issue of humility. They didn't value it. It was Jesus Christ who made it valuable. And it's no wonder that Calvin said this: humility comes first, second, third, and always. And among the precepts of the Christian religion, it marks the cleavage between the Greek and Christian ideals. The magnificent figure drawn by the Greek philosophy disappears, and instead, Jesus Christ presents the image of a little child. So first, last, and always, Calvin said, that's what we have. And so the Greeks were wrong, according to Jesus. They did not value humility. They thought it was something to be avoided, but we do. Humility is the conscious lowliness that we feel before God in view of his superabundant love. Did you ever feel God's superabundant love? And you know, you and I, we know, don't we? We're not worthy of it. You and I know that we did not deserve God's wonderful love. You and I know that deep down within us. But God has given it to us. And he's given us his grace. And he's given us his mercy. And we don't deserve it. We know it. And so humility is that conscious lowliness that we feel when we come into God's presence, that we did not deserve his wonderful gifts, that we did not deserve all these things. Because in contrast to God's graciousness, his abundant love, his holy majesty, we can contrast our own unworthiness, our own guilt, our own sins, and our total dependence on God's grace. You know, the Proverbs said pretty much what Jesus said in Proverbs 15, verse 33, and in 18, verse 12, we have these statements: before honor comes humility. And the other one in Proverbs 18, 12 says, humility goes before honor. You know, when Jesus was on the earth, he was trying to illustrate what humility was to his disciples. And in Matthew chapter 18, verse 2, he called a little child. I'm reading this from the New American Standard Version. He called a little child and had that child stand among them. Now here were his disciples. And he said to his disciples, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now, what that is saying, when you have a little child, you know what you call a little child? Little child is, you know, is dependent on you. He's overawed with the powers of an adult. And he comes, he's lowly. He knows he's lowly. He knows he can't do all the things an adult does. He knows he's dependent for his food, for his protection on adults. He knows that. He knows how dependent he is. Take a child that, you know, it's terrifying for a child to be lost and away from his parents and he doesn't know where he is, especially a little child that is very small, you know, that that can't fend for himself. Take a six-year-old child that gets lost, or a four-year-old child that gets lost. And it's terrifying. They can't provide for themselves. They can't take care of themselves. They don't know their way around. And so they're totally dependent. And Jesus says, we've got to become like that little child. We cannot, therefore, exaggerate our own worth. We can't stand like the Pharisee does and says, you know, I am so great. We can't do that. We can't do that. We can't assert our claims before God. The part we have to play is the part, what Jesus said in Luke 17, is the part of the unprofitable servant. And he gave that so that the disciples will increase their faith. Here in the book of Luke, chapter 17, I'm going to begin reading in verse 5. The apostles said to the Lord, increase our faith. And the Lord said, I'm reading this from the New American Standard Version. And the Lord said, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and be planted in the sea, and it would obey you. But which of you, having a slave plowing and tending sheep, will say to him when he comes in from the field, come immediately and sit down to eat? Will he not say to him, you know, you've got this servant, this slave comes in now, you pay him, he's your indentured slave, he's your indentured servant, and he has to come in. And you say, okay, you've worked in the field, all right, come on in, prepare dinner for me now that I may eat. And, you know, get yourself clothed right, wash up, you know, and then serve me until I have eaten and drunk. And afterward, you will eat and drink. You know, get my stuff ready, and then you can have the food. He does not thank the slave because he did the things that he was commanded to do, does he? So you too, when you do all the things you are commanded, you should say, we are unworthy servants, unworthy slaves. We have done only that which we ought to have done. Now Jesus is saying, this is the way you increase your faith. You increase your faith not by bragging about all that you've done, but by feeling that you are not yet worthy of all the things. You're not worthy. You haven't done the worthy thing. That's what he's telling us. In 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 5, Peter exhorts the younger men. He likewise, he says, be subject to your elders, you younger men. And all of you, now this is the whole church, all of you, he's saying, clothe, listen to this phrase, clothe yourselves with humility. That is, just put it on. Just cover yourself with humility toward one another. For God, listen to this phrase, is opposed to the proud and gives grace to the humble. That's the same passage that was in James chapter 4 and verse 6, that God resists the proud, says the King James, but the New American Standard says he opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. Like we read in Proverbs 3 and verse 34, though he scoffs at the scoffers, yet he gives grace to the afflicted. The wise will inherit honor, but fools display dishonor. So clothe yourselves. because he is opposed. That is, he sets himself up in opposition. You know, you see teams, if you have one volleyball team playing another volleyball team, they set up. And what do? They set up in opposition to each other. They set up to oppose each other. And that's what they do. And God sets up to oppose the proud, the people who exalt themselves, and he gives grace to the humble. In the book of Mark, chapter 9, we read this story about Jesus. And it says, they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he began to question the disciples, because they were talking about something on the way they came. And he says, well, what were you discussing on the way? But they kept silent, because on the way they had discussed with one another which of them was going to be the greatest. Now, I can't totally get mad at the disciples, because think about it this way. If you had been chosen by Jesus Christ, and now you have been with him, you have seen his miracles. You saw that he had multiplied fishes, multiplied loaves. You saw him walk on the water. You've seen him do a bunch of things. And so you're saying, you know, and he's chosen us. We're his disciples. And we're pretty proud. We're pretty, you know, and this is a very great honor to be the disciples of the Messiah himself, the Son of God. But then they began to say, well, which one of us is the greatest? I mean, he's, you know, he talked with me privately the other day, you know, and Peter says, well, yeah, but he's given me some charges. And John says, well, I think he loves me the most. And this one says that, and this one says this. And they're all talking about, you know, their greatness, how great they are, you know. Well, let me tell you something. You can talk about your greatness as how great you are, but you are nothing before God. And so Jesus said, now he gives them a different thing, and he sat down with them. He knew what they were talking about, and he sat down with them, and he said, he called the 12, and he said to them, if anyone, this is Mark chapter 9, verse 35, if anyone wants to be first, he shall be last of all, and servant of all. And taking a child again, here is this child, he set him before them, and taking him in his arms, he said to them, whoever receives one child like this in my name receives me. And whoever receives me does not receive me, but him who sent me. It's not just, you don't just receive me, you receive him who sent me. And in Matthew 20, you know, there's the story of Mrs. Zebedee, the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Mrs. Zebedee comes to him with her sons, and they bow down to him, and they make a request of him. And he said, well, what is it you want? And, you know, we'd like to request something of you. And he said, well, what is it that you want? And she said, I want you to command that in your kingdom, these two sons of mine may sit one at your right hand and the other on your left. I want them flanking you in your kingdom. And Jesus answered, and he said, you do not know what you're asking for. And then he asked the sons, are you able to drink the cup that I'm about to drink? They said to him, we are able. We'll do it. And he said to them, my cup you shall drink, but to sit on my right and on my left, this is not mine to give, but it is for those for whom it has been prepared by my Father. So nobody knows yet who's going to be sitting on Jesus' right and on Jesus' left. And hearing this, now the others, the 10 others, the other disciples, became indignant with the two brothers. But Jesus called them to himself, and he said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. Lord it. I mean, command them, do this, and they do that. The rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great men exercise authority over them. They don't only lord it, They exercise, they can make you pay taxes, they can make you go here, they can send you to war, they can do anything. The rulers of the Gentiles lord it over people. But Jesus came up with a completely different structure. He said in verse 6, "It is not so among you. But whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. And whoever wishes to be the first among you shall be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." There again, Jesus Christ emptied himself. He took on the form of a servant, a form of a servant that went all the way to the cross, the most humiliating of deaths. In Matthew chapter 23, Jesus is talking about, he sees all these Pharisees, and he noticed them. This is Matthew 23, beginning in verse 5. He said about all these Pharisees, "They do all their deeds to be noticed by men. For they broaden their phylacteries." They want to make sure everybody knows I'm conforming to the law. You know, the phylacteries were those parts of the ribbons you sewed on the hem of your garment, which said, "I'm a law keeper. I'm an obedient person. I'm a law keeper." And they broaden them. They want everybody to know, "Hey, my phylacteries are that big. Look how broad I am. I'm really a big law keeper." And they lengthen the tassels of their garments, so everybody sees, "I'm very holy, I'm very righteous, I'm truly a devout person." And Jesus said, "And they love the honor at banquets and the chief seats in the synagogues." They love it. The chief seats, they want that. "And they want the respectful greetings in the marketplaces. And they like to be called rabbi," that is teacher. But he says, "Don't you be called rabbi, for you have one who is your teacher, and you are all brothers. And you do not call anyone on earth your father, for you have one father, who is in heaven. And do not be called leaders, for one is your leader, that is Christ, the Messiah. But the greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself will be humbled. And whoever humbles himself will be exalted." That's Matthew 23, verse 12. We read that earlier. That's one of the standard principles of the whole Bible. It works whether you want it to work or whether you don't want it to work. It works in all circumstances, under all occasions. It works. And for a while, people can exalt themselves. You know, politicians do. They exalt themselves. They think they're great. They always tell about how wonderful they are and all the things they do. And then, of course, they put everybody else down. That's the standard way. But the way to exaltation is the way Jesus Christ went. And look what a high office he has, a name above every name on earth, that at the name of Jesus, every knee will bow. You know, on the night of the Passover, they were going to take the Passover, and there became a dispute. You'll see this in the book of Luke, chapter 22, and there's no doubt about it that it's the night of the Passover. "There arose also," this is Luke 22, beginning in verse 24, "there arose also a dispute among them again as to which of them would be regarded, who's going to be regarded to be the greatest." Who's going to be the greatest? Everybody wants to know who's going to be the greatest. "And he said to them, 'The kings of the Gentiles lord it over them.'" The same thing he said earlier in Matthew. "And those who have authority are called benefactors." By the way, one of the greatest ways to get rich is to be the benefactor of poor people. You'll notice that in the world today. People have foundations, or they have something set up, or they are dictators like Hugo Chavez. Oh, he had a great plan to take care of the poor, and all he did was funnel the money into his own coffers. Yeah. benefactors, but not so with you. But let him who is the greatest among you become as the youngest, and the leader as the servant. For who is greater, the one who reclines at table, or the one who is served, or the one who serves? Is it not the one in our world? Who in this world would be considered the greatest? The person who reclines at the table being served, or the one who is serving? But I, Jesus says, am among you as one who serves. And you are those who stood by me. And he goes on, he said, I'm going to give you a kingdom. I will grant you that you may eat and drink at my table in my kingdom, and will sit on the 12 on the thrones judging the 12 tribes of Israel. Now he says this to them, he's kind of rebuking them. And John's gospel of that same night, on that same night, John's gospel in chapter 13 says, now before the feast of the Passover, Jesus, knowing his hour had come, that he would depart out of the world to the Father, having loved his own, what did he do that night? What did Jesus do that night? Well, he got up from supper. You see, he got up. He didn't sit there. And what did he do? He poured water into a basin. He took his robe off. He wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into the basin. Now, here they're all arguing, who's the greatest? Who's going to be the greatest in the kingdom? They all got dirty feet. They all came in sandals. They all have dirty feet. They are not clean. And so Jesus says, well, you know, you know, when you went to almost anyone's home, it was customary and proper for you, when you entered the home, for the servant of the household, and many people had servants, and when you walked in, the servant would pour a basin of water, and you could wash your feet in it, or the servant would wash your feet. Come on in, you know, and I know you've walked the dusty roads. They didn't have paved roads like we do today. They didn't have regular shoes and socks like we do today. They wore sandals. And when they wore the sandals, the dirt got in between your toes, the grit and the dust and the so on, all, and sometimes covered your whole foot, sometimes covered you up to your ankle. And so when you were invited to someone's home, what was the right thing to do? The right thing to do was for them to wash your feet. They wanted to pour water into a basin. Here, let me wash your feet. Well, no one volunteered to wash anyone's feet except Jesus. Here's what he did. He rose up from supper. He laid aside his garments, and taking a towel, he girded himself about. Then he poured water in the basin and began to wash the disciples' feet. Now, they were at the table. Who is the greatest? Which one is the greatest? Which one is the greatest? And all of a sudden, here comes Jesus, who truly was the greatest. And what is he doing? He's taking the form of a servant. He's bowing down. He's washing people's feet. You know, there's nothing greater than that. He's bowing down. He's washing their feet. That must have been so humiliating. It must have been, especially he had already told them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, but it's not going to be that way among you. The one among you should be your servant. But nobody got up and did it except Jesus. Now he says, he poured water in a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel with which he was girded. He came to Simon Peter and he said to him, Lord, are you going to wash my feet? Jesus answered and said, what I do, you do not realize now. You'll understand hereafter. And of course, Peter said, you'll never wash my feet. Never. I'm never going to let you. Jesus said, if I don't wash you, you have no part. That's a very important statement. You have no part with me. You have no part of my kingdom. You have no part of what I'm about. You have no part of my process, my program, what I'm doing in the world. You have no part in it. And Peter says, okay, then wash my hands and my feet and my head and everything. And he said, no, you don't need, you're all clean except for for, of course, he implied Judas, but you need your feet washed. That's all. I'm trying to wash your feet for you, like a servant would, like everyone who is a servant would do. And they didn't realize that that's what he was doing. And he said, what I've done to you, I want you to do. I want you to do it to each other. And of course, we have adopted that as a ritual on the night in which we take the Lord's Supper, the bread and the wine. We humble ourselves. We wash the feet and pretend that we are washing the disciples. We are washing a disciple's feet. We are pretending we are washing even Jesus' feet, because Jesus is in every one of us. That's what we do. That's what a servant does. That is called humbling yourself. And remember, the word humble comes from that word that goes all the way, the English word comes back to earth. The Greek word, tapenos, means lowly. It means down low. You're brought down low. You know, we talk about being brought down to the earth. We said that last time. Yes, you're brought down low. And Jesus said, I'm among you as the one who serves. And so he did get up. And in Matthew chapter 20, this is what he said. Just Matthew 20 and verse 28. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served. I want you to think of that. Jesus did not come to this earth to be served. Here is a being. In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him. There was nothing made that was not made by him. Okay? And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Now, he didn't come. As exalted as he is, as powerful as he is, as important as he is, he did not come to be served. Now, did somebody serve him? Yes. One woman came in, washed his feet. Some women came in and bowed before him. But that's not his purpose. He did not come to be served. And what did he do for them? He forgave their sins. He said, I'm going to forgive you. And who could forgive? I'm going to take on your sins in me. I'm going to be crucified for you. He did not come to serve, but to be served. And in Luke chapter 22, in that same thing, I am among you as one who serves. And he got up from the dinner and washed their feet. Now, it is remarkable, and it is one of the great achievements of Jesus Christ, that he introduced into the world a new ideal of greatness. What's the new ideal of greatness? You know, everybody would like to take credit for doing something that really is fabulous. Really, think about it. Something that is truly fabulous in the world. I'd like to introduce a new ideal, something that everybody would say, this is my idea, and it's gone, and it's catching on. People love beautiful and new ideals, you know? And so here's a new ideal. He introduced a new ideal and a new idea into the world, such as an ideal as men have never dreamed of. You know, some people have an ideal. Here's what we ought to do, and here's this lofty ideal. Some of it is too airy, too lofty, and too remote. You know, everybody should, we should feed all the hungry, starving children around the world and all. It's a wonderful ideal. We should make sure there are no people that don't have, that live in poverty. You know, We had great ideals here, the war on poverty, I think under Lyndon Johnson. We've had the war on drugs. We're going to eliminate the world from drugs. We're going to eliminate the world from poverty. We're going to eliminate the world. We're going to have world peace. We had the ideal of the United Nations. It's going to bring the world peace. Everything's going to be good. We're going to feed every single person. And, you know, in the ancient time, in years, many years past, there's going to be a chicken in every pot. Well, there's never been a chicken in every pot. There's never been food on every table. There's never been all around the world where people are disease-free. We're going to have a war on poverty, a war on disease, a war on cancer, a war on drugs, a war on terror, and we still have terror. Every time we say we're going to declare war on something, it seems like it gets worse. No, those ideals are too airy, too remote. You can't even do it all. Too remote to come into touch with actual experience and practice. How are you going to do it? But here is an ideal. This is Jesus' law. You might call it Jesus' law of service. That the one who is greatest among you will be like your servant. This was an ideal that anyone could do. Any person can do this ideal. Okay? And it's within the reach of you and the reach of me and the reach of every person. It is open to all to do some simple deed of kindness, of service, of helpfulness, and at the same time, of self-denial. You know, when you go out of your way to help someone, you're going out of your way. You've denied yourself because you're trying to help someone else. When you do that, you're moving into something, you're denying yourself and you're fulfilling this. And no action inspired by Christ-like love and humility will pass unnoticed. Not one of these actions will Jesus Christ ever not notice. He will notice them all. And he tells you he will notice them all. Okay? And you see it here in the book of Matthew, chapter 25. And here we have at the judgment, in verse 31 of Matthew chapter 25. And he says here, "And when the Son of Man comes in his glory," this is Matthew chapter 25, beginning in verse 31. I'm reading from the New American Standard Version. "And all the angels with him, then he will sit on his glorious throne." That's when Jesus Christ will be glorified. That's when he is exalted. You see, he's already done his ideal. He's already been the servant. And it says, "And all nations will gather before him." Now you can imagine. "And he will separate them from one another as the shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. And he will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, 'Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For,'" he's going to say, "'for I was hungry, you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty, you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger, and you invited me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me.'" Now, the righteous are sort of bewildered here. You see in verse 37, "Then the righteous will answer and say, 'Lord, when did we see you hungry?'" I never remember that. "'And feed you, or thirsty, and give you something to drink? Or when did we see you a stranger and invite you in, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick and in prison and come to you?'" Well, when did we ever do it? I don't know. I don't remember that. "Then the king will answer and say to them, Truly I say to you, to the extent you did it to one of the least brothers of mine, even the least of them, the very lowest of them, the very least of them, the very most unimportant of them, the very person that can't, who can help you less than anybody. You know, it's been my experience in corporations and in corporate world, of even in the religious corporate world and even in the secular corporate world. You know, there's all kinds of movies and books about it, how to succeed in business without really trying and all that, that people butter up to the people in power. If a person can help you, if a person can do things for you, that's where you butter them up. I'm on your side. I want to know your. Can I be with you? Can I stay with you? Can I be with you? Can I help you? Can I serve you? Let me pick up your briefcase. Let me carry this for you. Now, he doesn't need that. He's got a lot of power, and people butter up to the person in power. For what reason? So that they can obtain something. The buttering up is not for the person in power, but so that they can obtain something. How sad. It's all selfishness. It's not self-denial, it's selfishness. And Jesus said, well, when you did it to one of the least of these brothers of mine, the least. This person can't help you that much. It's not that popular. This person doesn't have a lot of money. This person is not something super great in the world of people where they're going to give you something. No, no, no. Then he will say to the others on his left, depart from me, you accursed ones, into the everlasting or eternal fire. That means age-lasting fire. That's aeon fire, which was prepared for the devil and his angels. Listen to that. A fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And he's casting them. He's saying, you go. For I was hungry. You gave me nothing to eat. I was thirsty. You gave me nothing to drink. I was a stranger. You did not invite me in. Naked and you did not clothe me. Sick and you did not. In prison you did not visit me. Then they themselves also will answer, Lord, when did we see you hungry? When did we see you hungry or thirsty or in stranger or naked or sick or in prison? And when did we not take care of you? When would we not have done that? You know, everybody would take care of Christ, wouldn't they? If Jesus Christ walked in, how many people would take care of Jesus Christ? Everybody. Why? Well, he's the Messiah, right? If you knew he was the Messiah, you would do it. And it's the same way, you know, when the boss walks in, people straighten up. Oh, yeah, the boss walks in, then people straighten up. Because he's the boss. And Jesus then said to them, he will answer them, the Son of Man will answer, truly I say unto you, to the extent you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. The least, the lowest, the most humble. You know, when you do something for the least, the lowest, and the person who can't do it, that's humility. When you stoop down to help someone in a menial task, that's humility. Humility means lowering yourself. The Greek word tapenos means lowly. People who are low down, lowly. And Jesus says you have to lower yourself. For everyone who, you know, what's the difference? Exalts, puts himself up, will be lowered, humbled. And the people who humble themselves, you have to humble yourself. That's what you do. It's not that you're waiting for someone to humble you. You humble yourself. And that means when you humble yourself, you will be exalted. And Jesus can say to you, you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers. and you did it to me.